Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:13 British Summer Time. Today is October 7th. Today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week and the volatility that's been characteristic right across the just about every market continued this week. We've had up one week, down the next for much of the last 7 or 8 weeks, and this was an up week by and large. The majority of markets bounced emphatically this week. Earlier on Monday, we saw that it was generally a fairly weak day, but Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we had some emphatic moves to the upside. So the S&P 500 briefly broke below its early August lows, but rallied emphatically and pushed right back up above the middle of the range. It's finishing out the week down about a third of 1% today, but it's rallied almost 100 points in this week. The Nasdaq 100 went right down and tested the lows at the August lows and has also rallied emphatically. It's finishing out the week just above 2200. At the beginning of the week, it was much closer to 2100. So another emphatic move there. The FTSE 100, a very similar story. It's rallied so emphatically that it's now actually testing the upper side of the 8 week range. Now, the FTSE has been consolidating for much of the last 2 months. It's almost completely unwound its overextension relative to the 200 day moving average. The DAX, on the other hand, which is right in the center of Europe, it's the lead. Germany is the leading economy in the European zone. It's by far the largest. It's got a large number of export-oriented companies. Most of the companies, of the major cap companies in Germany, are export-oriented and in addition, industrially oriented. Now, industrial shares have really borne the brunt of selling pressure over the last 2 and 3 months. The DAX is deeply oversold relative to its 200-day moving average. In that market, there is considerably more room for a short covering rally than you have in the FTSE. The FTSE has already closed its overextension relative to the 200-day moving average. The potential that these markets have put in a medium-term low at this stage has increased substantially. More on that in a moment. This week in Asia, incredible volatility as well. Whereas a number of markets in Europe and the USA have been ranging for much of the last 2 months, Asian markets continue to break to the downside. They were originally quite emphatic holdouts, then they broke lower, and they now appear to be catching a little bit of short covering. Now, an example of that is the Hang Seng. The Hang Seng was stronger yesterday by over 5% following the Mid-Autumn Festival holiday. It was stronger again in here today by 3%. Now, an example of a share in Hong Kong is Hutchison Whampoa, the Li Ka Shing's telecommunications company, and that share has lost almost 50% of its value this year. It was up by over 10% today. That was a massive, emphatic weekly key reversal, and there are an increasing number of weekly keys on some of the shares that have had some of the largest declines. So at the very minimum, that tells us that we're beginning to see a little bit of short covering, particularly industrially oriented shares have pulled back particularly sharply. They're deeply oversold, and they are beginning to catch at least a relief rally. Now, significant technical damage has been done, whereas the USA and Europe has been largely range bound and has some of the characteristics of base formation development at this stage. The deteriorations that we've seen, particularly in the industrial shares or in a number of those Asian stock markets, really does suggest that we're going to need more evidence to suggest to say that they have reached medium-term lows. The extent of the technical damage means that they're going to need time. They're going to need time to go sideways for a while, unwind their overextensions relative to their 200-day moving averages, then push back above them. So that is is still a big question mark out there. Now, it's a very similar story in terms of some of the commodities. Industrial metals, in particular, have pulled back very sharply. Both platinum and palladium are a very similar story. They've all broken downwards, they've all extended declines, and then really pulled back very sharply over the last 3 weeks. They're beginning to encounter some bullish activity down here. Copper, for example, was brushing the $4.50 area earlier this year. It declined back to the $4 area, then it broke below that, then it broke below 380 and fell to almost $3 earlier this week, and is currently at 330. So it's rallied by 10% this week, and it is still deeply oversold relative to the 200-day moving average. An additional advance is still a possibility, but so is an additional ranging phase. Technical damage has been done. It's going to need time to demonstrate that demand is coming back into dominance in here. But in the meantime, the potential for an additional reef rally is significant. Once that has run its course, there's still the likelihood that it could pull back and retest the lower, hopefully find, if the bullish case is to be to be borne out, then it will find support above the recent low on the next pullback. It's a similar story with something like platinum. Platinum pulled back extremely sharply. It encountered some bullish activity earlier this week around the $1,400 level. It's finishing out the week at almost $1,500 even. So there is some short covering going on in here. There is certainly potential that it can extend this advance in the short term, but there has been technical damage done. It will have to demonstrate that it can find support above the recent low on a pullback to begin to suggest that demand is coming in at incrementally higher levels. U.S. Treasuries were dropped briefly below 140 in here today. Oh, sorry, they went right down and touched 140. Gilts dropped below 128 briefly and finished out the day at 128.43. And German Bunds went down and looked at 135. Now, those are all psychologically important levels for those three respective sovereign bond markets. They have been some of the mo they have represented some of the most consistent advances over the last few months. 140 for US Treasuries is where the progression of higher reaction lows is. A sustained move below that level would constitute a top formation, a completion. It's exactly the same thing for gilts at 128 and for Eurobonds at about 135. This week was notable for yesterday's announcement from the Bank of England that they are engaging once more in quantitative easing, and from the ECB that they are getting ready to make 1-year loans available to various financial institutions. We're starting to see that central banks are coalescing around the idea that they're going to need to stimulate their respective economies a little bit more in here. The velocity of money has not picked up. Economic growth is still very sluggish. That's going to require additional funds to keep or to help avoid recessionary pressures. There's been a great deal of concern about recession in Europe, recession in the USA, the potential for Greece to default on its debt, and what the repercussions of that are going to be for the rest of Europe, whether there's going to be contagion, whether there's going to be a default situation in some of the banks. This week, we've seen that central banks are stepping up. They're starting to talk about what they're going to do in the event of a Greek default. Are they going to rescue the banks? Will there be additional funds provided? And this crisis has turned more solution focused this week, whereas the last 5 and 6 weeks have been primarily problem focused. And that is a welcome development. The gold market this week continues to range around this $1,600 level. It was firm for a good part of the week. It's a little bit weaker in here today. Silver, having had a good week and a particularly a good day yesterday, is down a little bit in here today. Gold has found support in the region of its 200-day moving average. It's bounced emphatically. It has begun to build support above that 200-day moving average. This is a textbook reversion towards the mean so far. To bolster any kind of bearish claim, it would need to sustain a move below $1,500. And at present, there's no sign that it's going to do that. Gold remains in a secular bull market. It's being supported on the one hand by those that are looking for a solid investment, something that they can hold in their hands and can have faith in, that it can't simply be wished into existence. And there are others that buy gold because it represents wealth. It represents a status and a level of achievement that is a cut above other people. So there are those that buy gold because they are afraid about the debauching of currencies by various central banks, and there are those that buy gold because they love the metal and everything that it represents. In addition to all of that, the supply of gold from mines globally continues to decline in the face of an advancing and increasing demand structure. So while gold was really quite overbought up there above $1,900, it has come back towards the 200-day moving average. Reversion towards the mean in the context of consistent medium-term uptrends are generally reasonably favorable entry points. And that has provided gold remains above the $1,500 level, that is likely to remain the case. If we take a step back and look at the markets from a long-term perspective, this has been a very difficult few months. The Eurozone crisis is going to take time above all else to unfold and to be dealt with. I have every expectation that we're still going to be using the euro in 10 years' time. The euro is massively beneficial to the German economy. As long as that remains the case, Germany isn't going to leave the euro. That means that while Greece may be pressured to leave the currency at some stage, and I think that that is still an unlikely prospect, that the currency will survive. That removes a certain amount of uncertainty from the perspective of many investors. In addition, we have the massive growth prospects that we in Asia. Asia central banks have been on a tightening bias for the last year and a half. That tightening is beginning to bite. We're starting to see that growth is moderating. Central banks are serious about combating inflationary pressures. The Chinese central bank and monetary author and fiscal authorities want to pop the housing bubble. They're going to keep going until they succeed. China has in the region of 3 trillion in foreign currency reserves. There's been a great deal of concern recently about the unregulated pools of capital that are making loans, and they have proliferated over the last couple of years as the reserve requirements have for various Chinese banks have increased to 21.5% at present. They constitute a problem. They're a symptom. The fact that we're starting to see some of these trusts going bust is a symptom of the tightening that we're getting from the People's Bank of China. That's a short-term worry. The problems in Europe are a medium-term headwind to growth. The USA has had deteriorating governance for the last 10 years. They've had deteriorating financial governance in particular. Corporate governance has improved substantially in the last 2 years. The political governance is going to take time to iron out. The USA remains in a secular valuation contraction where we get lower P/E ratios and higher dividend yields. I think you could probably argue the same thing for a number of the European markets at this stage. That is likely to impact growth forecasts for the USA for the next few years. Generally, it takes in the region of 5 to 7 years to unwind from a credit crisis or a crash that's motivated by credit problems. And this has really only been about 2 years. But when we look at Asia, Asia's problems of inflation are symptoms of strong growth. This is where you have the world's biggest populations, you have the fastest growing economies. Those economies are relatively low leverage, so the respective governments have got pretty solid balance sheets. A number of the economies in the region are export focused. They have strong trade surpluses. There's low debt at a government level, there's low debt at corporate and personal levels. That means that there's plenty of room to leverage up in those economies. There are massive young populations, and those populations, above all else, are growing up, and they are hitting the age where their demand for just about everything is increasing. And for the first time ever, you have huge numbers of young people hitting their most their highest consumption years with money to spend. The trickle-down effect from Asian growth is leading to a massive expansion in the global middle classes, and the per capita consumption of just about everything is rising. So while we have a short-term tightening bias, potentially medium-term tightening bias, the long-term outlook for Asia remains very rosy indeed. These tightening periods are inevitable. We've always said that a secular bull market will be punctuated by occasional corrections. We are in one of those corrections. We've had a large pullback. Shares that are, in the West at least, leveraged to the growth of the global consumer have been among some of the clear relative strength leaders. If one looks at shares such as McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Bristol-Myers Squibb, then one wouldn't really know that we'd had a correction at all. In the Asian region, we've had large pullbacks in most stock markets. We're beginning to see signs that bullish activity is returning, and that's good news. This is from the perspective of someone who is looking at the long term. This we're being presented, or at least we will be presented in the not too distant future, with relatively favorable entry points for a large number of these markets. Commodities remain in a secular bull market. They are also impacted by the tightening bias. They've all pulled back. But with per capita consumption of just about everything increasing and continued pressure on the supply side, then that's a recipe for higher prices over the medium term. But commodities are always going to be volatile. They're best bought following reactions. It's been a mantra at Fuller Money for the last decade, don't pay up for commodities. It rarely pays off. And we've had the big pullbacks. Buying commodities within the confines of a secular bull market after a big pullback is, while the perception is that it's high risk, it's in fact relatively low risk when they've already had the big pullback and are showing signs that they're beginning to find support. US Treasuries have been rallying for much of the last 30 years. Yields have compressed to historic levels. They are at present really quite overextended relative to their 200-day moving average. The potential for a pullback and consolidation has increased substantially. Economic growth in the USA remains moribund. It's a slow growth environment. There isn't a lot of indication that it's going to turn into a high growth environment anytime soon. The Fed is doing all it can to avoid a deflationary spiral. They're printing money like stink. They can get away with that. That's not going to be inflationary as long as the velocity of money is low. They're printing so much money that it is not only compensating for the slowdown in the velocity of money, it's actually overcompensating. They're flirting with inflation at this juncture. The most important point, of course, is that money creation doesn't just stay in the USA. It floats out into the rest of the world, and excess capital will always flow towards the most productive asset. Over the last 2 years, the US dollar has been the funding currency of choice for leveraged traders. That money has flowed out into the rest of the world. Over the last 2 months, it's flowed back. The US dollar has rallied substantially. And there isn't any great sign yet that the US dollar's rally has ended. So, while there are signs that some of the assets that were pumped up by the weakness of the dollar and leveraged trading are beginning to find support, there's no real conclusive evidence that the US dollar's rally has ended. The US dollar this week was a little bit softer. It has become really quite overextended relative to its MA against a whole string of currencies, and it does appear to at least be unwinding part of that overbought condition. But it hasn't really broken its short-term uptrend. There is still potential for the US dollar to advance. So that could put additional pressure on the commodity complex, and we remain within an uncertain environment in the short term. Long term, I'm still very bullish of Asia and the Asian growth story. I think that we are probably in a region of a medium-term low. In Asia, there's not a great deal of evidence to support that just yet. Those markets are going to need to spend some time building support. I think there's a better argument for that in Europe and in the USA at present. The medium-term outlook is still uncertain. There's going to have to be a lot of political wheeling and dealing that goes on in Europe to get this situation under control. There's going to have to be an improvement in political governance in the USA. The polarization that's occurred between the Republicans and the Democrats isn't particularly new, but at this stage it's at a point where it's not particularly healthy. The commodity complex remains an attractive area. Gold looks at present to be the market that's most likely to move into the next bubble. It's ticked a lot of the boxes already. It's only been within the last decade that people didn't want to talk about gold at all. Now, there are probably still people that don't want to buy gold, but they're not talking about it anymore. They're not saying, "I don't want to talk about gold, don't talk to me about gold, don't leave the room if you want to talk about gold." They're keeping their mouths shut. Everybody gets the message. Gold's advance has become much more consistent in the last 2 and 3 years than it had been in the previous 7. Gold is one of the only assets that has posted a positive return every year for the last decade. Now, that is a statistic that's inspiring to a lot of people. I was sitting on a panel discussion 2 weeks ago focused on India, and we were talking about markets. And one of the panelists, who was an economist and an academic economist rather than someone involved in markets, quipped, I should say, that he wasn't interested in what happened in the markets because you should only buy gold. I found that interesting. It's got to a juncture now where people have a lot of faith in gold. people are not willing to sell it. We're starting to see people saying, whatever you do, don't sell your gold. That helps to support the market. Particularly after a shakeout like this, there is a strong cohort of people that are not selling. They're increasing their positions. That's helping to support this bull market. Major bull markets are generally choked off by higher interest rates. We've had a tightening of monetary policy over the last few months, and we're now beginning to see it slowly starting to loosen once more. The moves by the ECB and the Bank of England are a step in that direction. A reversal of the tightening bias in Asia would be a green light for investing in China and India in particular. Gold has already gone up a lot. Anyone coming in at this stage isn't certainly not early, but that doesn't mean that they're going to lose money either. There is every indication that gold could end in gold fever, and that would be what most people have been waiting for. We want to invest in the markets that are most likely to form bubbles because they're the ones that are going to be comparatively easy to make money in. Gold remains likely to end in bubbly activity. When we start to see that, then we need to start thinking about an exit strategy. It's all well and good to participate. It's well and good to be rewarded for holding on, but at some stage one has to think about an exit strategy. We're not there yet. Gold still has probably significantly further to go in terms of this major bull market. But thinking about an exit strategy is never time wasted. If gold moves into a massive acceleration higher, then justifying why it can continue to advance wouldn't be the best strategy. Major accelerations. Acceleration is always a trend ending, as we say at the chart seminar, but of unspecified duration. Gold has been going up for long enough that if it accelerates in a really meaningful way, then the chances are that that is going to represent an ending. We've seen in the last 3 years that, sorry, the last at least 4 or 5 years, that gold has become overextended relative to the MA by 30%. That constitutes a large overextension, and it has resulted in pullbacks on the last 3 occasions. If gold becomes substantially more overextended relative to the MA than 30%, then that's got to be setting off warning lights in terms of where this trend is eventually going. The ratio relative to the Dow Jones has compressed steadily over the last decade. It's now getting down to big numbers in terms of the amount that gold or the Dow need to move that ratio just a single point. And that means that to get to an historic low, that ratio needs gold fever to occur. And there's nothing has occurred yet to indicate that that isn't going to be the case. I think with that, I will leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.